Hi everyone, and welcome to Literary Loitering, the geek show's dedicated arts and books and anything related to that podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today is Sarah.
Hello.
And Andrew.
That one's me.
And no Graham.
Dun dun da 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 da.
He is not here this week.
Or is he? No, he's not.
You had me looking around my room for a second there.
I think most weeks he's not in your room.
I was actually concerned for a second there. Started looking over my shoulder to see if he was here. I have a cupboard right behind me, which is big enough for a person to hide in. So
yeah, I've got a screen in front of me, which is big enough for a person to hide behind.
Now we're all paranoid.
I sleep in an actual shoebox, so I'm fine.
Thank you, Sarah. Now we're all paranoid that Graham's going to jump out at some point in the episode.
Not unless you say his name 5 times.
At least he's not like Beetlejuice. We made that mistake once already. Over on Form Panel, we're not allowed to say Beetlejuice again, me and Andrew, and we're not allowed to say Shazam.
Whoa. Getting close there, Rob.
Yeah, I know. I said it twice. I'm keeping count, don't worry. Now I'm not allowed to say it on this again, am I? Anyway, we like to start off with a callback to some of the other things we've talked about previously. Yes, we've got previous. Donald Trump Jr. wrote a book, didn't he?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now,
what was it called? Triggered?
Yes.
Yes, I remember that.
Oh, God, it was. But yeah, I was going to say, at least he paid someone to write a book for him.
Well, he
potentially,
as is the family tradition.
He's more than just upholding the family tradition on. He's upholding the family tradition on all fronts, right? 30 years ago, Donald Trump apparently wrote a book called "The Art of the Deal" using ghostwriters. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he also reportedly ordered key staff to buy thousands of copies of "The Art of the Deal" to make it seem more popular than it was.
That does sound like him.
Well, guess who follows in Daddy's footsteps?
Are you going to have to tell me? I just don't know.
Donald Trump Jr. See, he's been accused of inflating the sales figures for his number one bestseller by using pretty similar tactics to what his dad used and simply paying people to go out and buy as many copies of his book as possible.
Oh, no, paying people as well.
That's just like
handing out just like 20 quid. In the sugar. Can you just go to Waterstones and buy my book, please?
You know, it's bizarre that he's doing exactly the same thing that his dad did. The New York Times bestseller list revealed its sales had been boosted by bulk purchases. Triggered topped the New York Times nonfiction chart last week, but the newspaper has added a dagger beside the book to indicate that some retailers report receiving bulk orders. And earlier this month, reporters pointed out that the Republican National Committee was emailing supporters urging them to contribute funds in exchange for a signed copy of Triggered, which is subtitled "How the Left Thrives on Hate and Wants to Silence Us."
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the Republican National Committee denied making bulk purchases, telling press it was ordering copies to keep up with demand.
Yeah, the demand of Donald Trump Jr. asking them to buy them. That was the demand. He demanded that they bought them.
Yeah.
Also, it says a signed copy, but it doesn't say by whom.
I just imagine it's like a hoof print.
Yes, probably. He's just like paid 1,000 people to scroll in a book for him, probably, to sign his signature.
I can't remember, were the Republicans the elephant or the donkey?
Do you know, ironically, it's not the donkey, I don't think. I think the Democrats are the donkey.
Well, right, okay. So it's basically like just a stamp from an elephant then.
Yeah.
It could be worse. In a related story, in a bizarrely related story, a librarian in the US state of Idaho has said that a mysterious visitor is going into their library and hiding books that criticise President Donald Trump or contain liberal viewpoints.
Oh, unbelievable.
Not just Trump literature, books on LGBTQ issues, gun control, and women's suffrage have also been hidden or refiled as fiction.
Oh my goodness. Refiled as fiction.
Yeah, I mean, it's... You just got to think, how, what? Why? Why would you spend half the day taking books from one section of a library to another unless you were getting paid to do it?
I don't know. It just has sort of like, it smacks of Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah. So you're suggesting maybe they are getting paid to do it?
Yeah, and probably like, but in some secret corner of the library.
The kids section. Yeah. With all the low tables.
The kids / bin section. Yeah. And then just stick them all in the bin and set fire to them.
I prefer the kids section with like the play tea sets and stuff like that. And they're just a couple of shady characters there. You know, and they're just pretending to have a tea party.
In our local library, they've now got a bank.
What?
In part of our new local library. It's been sectioned off and rented out to a bank.
When you say bank, you mean like Barclays?
Financial institution.
Yeah, not a book bank or something like that.
No.
Or a blood bank or
bank. That'd be more interesting, but no. We've just had to, I think they've, to save money, and because libraries have changed like quite a lot, and that's one of their ways of adapting to the changes. They've rented out part of their space to a bank. Instead.
Yes, interesting story, Sarah.
Thanks. I thought you would enjoy that particularly, Andrew.
Yes, that's why I've been sitting here so silently. I was that enraptured.
Indeed. I thought he is going to love this.
So, yeah, people hiding anti-Donald Trump books in the library is a thing, but the author of one of those books has decided to retaliate in kind of brilliant fashion. Someone hid one of his books. It's Rick Riley, a former Sports Illustrated and ESPN contributor. He's the author of Commander in Cheat, How Golf Explains Trump. Someone hid his book in the Idaho Library, so he thought, okay.
So somebody hid his book in the Idaho Library? Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, it wouldn't be my first choice of places to look.
Well, you know, it was already in there. Somebody hid it from other people getting it. But he has responded to that by saying, okay, I'm going to take 10 other books there and hide them myself. So, yeah.
I think what you need to do is just start hollowing out, like, pro-Trump books and hiding your book inside them.
Oh, God, it's going to be Shawshank Redemption type stuff, isn't it?
I mean, if the librarians aren't doing their jobs, then yeah, certainly. Well, I'm pretty sure you can just walk out the front door of a library. You don't need to, like, tunnel your way out through a wall.
Yet. Fahrenheit 451 isn't the only dystopian fiction that I know of involving books. There's one from Japan called Library Wars, where books are considered such a rare object in the dystopian future that they are protected by armed guards, and they're actually, you know, libraries are places where the librarians are literally just soldiers with guns.
Man, they're going to kick themselves when they find out about Kindle.
Okay.
The troops now to reinforce the library.
Did you just hear a train go by?
Yes.
Oh, God. I never, because I don't even notice them anymore. And I've got headphones on. Sorry.
It's all right. Anyway, interesting news. Publishers are preparing for Work in Publishing Week. Have you guys heard of this?
No.
From Monday the 18th of November to Sunday the 24th of November, it's Work in Publishing Week, and publishers
I have to leave my job and go and work in a publishing house?
No.
Okay.
Publishers including And Other Stories, Cambridge University Press and HarperCollins are they're trying to get young people aged 14 to 24 inspired to pursue a career in publishing. And so they're inviting young people to come and work for them, obviously for free, for a week.
So we're getting kids to work for no wages for a week. Does this initiative come from Jacob Rees-Mogg?
I don't know.
Is the publishing house just a very large factory where the word publishing has been like haphazardly stapled over the word work?
See, the national campaign also coincides with Discover Creative Careers Week, a week-long event led by Creative and Cultural Skills that aims to help teenagers discover the breadth of jobs on offer in the sector. And so HarperCollins will be visiting and hosting work in publishing sessions in 6 secondary schools in Southwark, and the other publishers will be going to various others as well.
Around the world?
No,
around the country?
Surprisingly, mainly down south.
Shocking. Wow, you do surprise me. Wow. Paint that shock all over my face.
Exactly. So, okay, what do we know about publishing between the three of us?
Well, I was wondering about, like, with the change in the way people consume reading material. I wondered if it was an initiative designed to sort of remind people that publishing houses exist and to try and get them on board with the whole notion of books, rather than on an electronic device or reduced to 140 characters, 280. Yep.
That could be one of the reasons for it. It's a very good reason for it as well. What about you, Andrew? You did journalism. You know a fair bit about publishing, don't you?
No. I'm literally completely separate industries, Rob.
Printing newspapers and publishing, aren't they the same thing?
I didn't know you did journalism.
I did. Cool. The journalism diploma. Look at the heights it got me to.
Oh, yeah.
So what do you think, Andrew? Do you think this is a Jacob Rees-Mogg plan? Or is it something that's going to get people into the exciting world of publishing?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, sure, maybe offering like work experience placement to like actual school kids, you know, when they're doing a work experience week.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's, you know, kind of giving them plenty of opportunities to try like various careers.
Mm.
But I think once we're getting into the like 20 to 24 type range, that's basically just saying, hey, you're looking for a job in publishing, work for us for free. It's like having a job, only with none of the benefits.
Yeah, basically.
I suppose it'd be like an internship at that age.
I don't know. Yeah. Don't interns get paid?
Well, if you've got a paid internship.
Okay.
But not if you have an unpaid internship.
It really varies on that factor, yeah.
So what's the difference between an unpaid intern and a volunteer?
Let me think. No.
I think the answer is, Rob, you're getting dangerously close to the secret of big business.
Right, now I know how to get people on board.
Yeah. Basically, an unpaid intern is like a volunteer, only you feed them a whole lot of schnonsense about, no, it's great, it's experience, it's exposure, this is going to help you go places.
God, I would like to know, I'd love it if we had statistics for the amount of unpaid work people do. I think it would be a phenomenal amount. Voluntary stuff, voluntary organisations, doing stuff for exposure, doing stuff as a quid pro quo exchange, unpaid caring, everything.
I was about to say the highest amount would probably be unpaid caring.
Yeah, I bet it is.
And especially like some kind of statistic for how many of those unpaid positions have then led on to like a permanent position. Discounting the times when it's, oh, and also my mum just happens to be best mates with the person who runs this company.
Yeah. So anyway, leaving the publishing world to one side and heading to jail.
Okay, well, it's been great. Ta-ra.
Yeah.
Many times said that this podcast is a crime.
Charlotte Community Library in Missouri, they made a slight boo-boo kind of thing, and now a woman is having to pay the price of it. See, Melissa Sanders-Jones, she discovered that there was a warrant out for her arrest. The mother of 5 said her boss called her, to inform her that she had a warrant and she had to pull over because she started laughing. And he was saying, no, I'm serious. And then it turned out the warrant was for two children's books that she'd forgotten to return to the library. They were returned to the library by her boyfriend 2 years late, but returned to the library. She went to the police station, handed herself in, but now she's going to be hauled in front of a judge for the warrant and various... And that's basically it. The library was saying that she never responded to them when they sent letters to her and tried to phone her. But then they also kind of stopped and went ahead with all sorts of litigation and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's a massive amount of money to lay out on one little book.
Two little books? Two little kids' books?
Sorry, two little kids' books, yeah. Like a fiver each or something, and thousands of pounds of litigation.
Oh, it gets worse. It gets worse. See, Melissa Sanders-Jones, at the time the library was trying to contact her, was actually in a women's shelter after being in an abusive relationship and managing to successfully leave it.
Oh, my God. And then the library just joined in with that abuse. Awesome.
Yeah. So now...
they'd done a bad.
Exactly.
Oh, they did done a bad.
So Charlotte Library has refused to comment further on the Sanders-Jones case, citing confidentiality.
Yes, it's confidential that they are Doyles.
I mean, at least get someone to check.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's just the person for. I'm sorry, we can't comment about that at that time. Hang up.
So it's escalated now.
Melissa Sanders-Jones is waiting for her next court hearing and hoping that she can persuade the judge to drop the charges, because at the end of the day, it's matters beyond her control.
She's got a huge amount of mitigation for that case, though. And surely.
She had to change her phone. She couldn't get the
train.
That is staying in, by the way. Melissa Sanders-Jones, she couldn't get a mail from her old address because her boyfriend still lived there and kept phoning her, so she had to change her phone number.
Yeah, they have to allow for that, surely. It's completely beyond her control.
Exactly.
And it would have resulted in damage or danger, personal endangerment. And she got two kids' books out, so there's kids involved, so it's endangering the kids as well.
Yeah.
I'm just confused by the fact that you can arrest people for unpaid library fines.
Yeah. I mean, it seems a bit OTT, doesn't it?
I mean, I've never heard of anyone in the UK being arrested for unpaid library fines.
No.
Yeah, I assumed it was just like parking tickets, where just if you don't pay it, it just kind of hangs about.
You get a CCJ against you eventually because it goes in front of a magistrate. And then that's your credit limit basically screwed, isn't it?
Mm.
You can use ClearScore or whatever service you want. It will say, nope, you're not getting a loan.
Yeah, but you also don't, like, have SWAT bursting down the doors, you know, tackling you to the ground and hauling you in front of the judge.
I'm sorry, that would be... that's Fahrenheit 451 right there. We're arresting you for the crime of reading. See Spot Run, Run Spot Run.
Possession of a book with intent to read.
malicious lingering in a library.
Or literary loitering, because it's awesome. See what I did there?
Yes, we saw what you did there. And it was good. It was very good. Oh, right. Okay. So, moving on to John Bercow.
Is it time dependent, time specific?
No, it's one of those.
Be outdated by the time he gets around to it.
It's one of those ones where he would narrate it better than I would.
You just have a way.
It's about audiobooks and stuff like that. So, I'm going to let him do it because it's not actual news. It's more of a piece on it.
Okay.
So anyway, moving on to John Bercow, the now former Speaker of the House of Commons. So yeah, he has announced that he is going to be publishing a candid memoir. it's John Bercow's.
I'd expect nothing less.
No holds barred, tell-all expose of everything that goes on in the House of Commons. And it's called Unspeakable.
Oh, clever.
Yes. Yeah, it's an all right title, isn't it?
I honestly thought he was going to go with order. Because that's what everyone knows.
He's going to get a job at McDonald's.
Well, to be fair, they all did say that word. That is all of their lines.
Yeah. So, Order.
He had a very distinctive order.
Yeah.
Like, order.
Yeah.
But I say that I'm not sure I've ever actually heard John Bercow speak so much as just like the Dead Ringers impersonation of him.
That's it, yes, that's where I was going.
See, now that he's left the House of Commons, I mean, if he sticks a V on the end of that, it could be a tasty treat.
House of Commons V.
No, on the end of order.
Hors d'oeuvre. Sir, madam, would you like an hors d'oeuvre?
Well, I mean, he's finished his job now. He's probably looking around for work. So, I mean, there's always waiting jobs.
Yes, there are.
You can go and beat some waiting staff.
And hors d'oeuvre works, you know, it doesn't... Saying canapé just doesn't...
doesn't quite work.
It's a
romantic
canopy, though.
It is.
Sorry. Sorry, just dying.
And then there were two.
Is it going to be a thing ending where we just have to stare at each other and then the camera slowly pans out?
Oh, beg pardon, chaps.
No worries. But yeah, Unspeakable will, it's going to be an eye-opener because last week...
Oh, I don't like that. That's mixing your metaphors, John Bercow.
Yeah. Last week, Bercow said in an interview with The Observer that Cameron feels he is born to rule and that Brexit is the biggest mistake of this country after the war. Unspeakable will also explain the ways in which Bercow, son of a cab driver in North London, has sought to democratise the business of Parliament using the speakership to champion the rights of backbench MPs and hold the government to account.
Good lad.
So, yeah. I might actually sit down and read this. There's very few people whose biographies or autobiographies I would consider reading. John Bercow is one of them.
Yeah, he's an interesting character, I think. He does. There's something about him that makes you go, oh, yeah, he's quite interesting.
I mean, if you look at his personal history, he was a very right-wing Tory at the beginning of his career.
Yeah.
And now he's a lot more liberal. I mean, he married a Labour MP, didn't he?
Did he?
Well, was it a Labour MP or was it someone from grassroots Labour? I can't remember. But yeah, his wife is definitely Labour.
Right.
Which I think has helped temper some of his more right-wing ideologies and tendencies. And... you know, he's reached that age where he's now looking at things with a more measured view. And I suppose being the Speaker for 10 years as well, he's seen...
Yeah.
He's seen the worst that the House of Commons has to offer, for definite.
Yeah. It's been an extraordinary period to be Speaker, definitely. What's the name of that guy? William Hague. I think he was the same way. I think he was a lot more right-wing when he was younger. And I think he's tempered his views as well. I think he's much more moderate now.
Yeah, he's a lot more moderate now, but you know, he still likes to think that he's very, very Yorkshire. But you know, he'll never be Doctor Who.
Is that a trait of people from Yorkshire, though?
What, that they're very, very Yorkshire?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I like that joke. I like that joke.
More a trait of people from Yorkshire than people not from Yorkshire.
But it's like that joke about how can you tell a person from Yorkshire? Oh, they'll tell you. It's the same thing about vegans. Same gag.
Right, okay. I get it now.
Yeah.
I thought it was about how they don't say H.
It's what not, do they say?
Well, they just don't say H.
What, do they say H or do they just never pronounce
the H? They never pronounce the H. So it's not Halifax. Yeah, so it's not Halifax, it's Halifax.
Halifax.
And... from steps.
So when does this tell sensational publication, when is it released?
Let's have a look.
When does he have to write it?
Well, he's got a publisher for it. It's not due out anytime soon, I think.
I bet he's got a publisher lined up, and he'll be keeping like diary or something. So it just needs collating and sort of curating.
Yeah. Speaking of book sales, Judi Dench, Dame Judi Dench, has appealed to the public for help to bring a rare Bronte book back to the UK as the auction for it looms on the horizon. It's a miniature book by the teenage Charlotte Bronte, and it could fetch at least £650,000 in Paris next week at Haworth's Parsonage. And Haworth's Parsonage Museum hopes to buy it with crowdfunding.
And how much is it?
It could fetch up to £650,000.
Wow. See, I suspect it would be a crowdfunding thing.
Are they going to sell the Parsonage?
I was kind of hoping that Judi Dench was trying to organise the country into like one massive heist.
And it was written in 1830 when Charlotte Bronte was 14. The manuscript measures just 35 millimetres by 61 millimetres and features three handwritten stories, one of which describes a murderer who is driven into madness when he is haunted by his victims. It's been it's been in private ownership since the death in 1855 of Charlotte, the longest lived of the literary sisters, and it is one of six tiny booklets produced by the writer at the parsonage in Haworth.
Has nobody seen it since then?
Only five are known to have survived, and the museum owns the remaining four of the little books. So this is the only other one of the little books that's outside the Parsonage Museum's hands.
Yeah. Has it always been in France?
I don't know.
I mean, apart from when it was in the 1830s.
It doesn't say.
Right.
But there's only a couple of days left before the actual auction, and so...
damn it, I don't get paid until next month.
Oh, you can chuck in a quid.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you look at it and you go, yeah, I get it. I understand why it's important to bring this back. But by the same token, surely we could give the Elgin Marbles back to Greece then?
Yeah, I know. This is the eternal debate, isn't it? I get that. I think they're very keen to get the Elgin Marbles back. Marbles? I think they're very keen to get Miriam Margolyes back. And I don't understand why we're hanging on to the Elgin Marbles, because they're not ours. And various mummies and, you know, like wholesale ransacking of countries and nicking all their stuff. And,
yeah. I mean, it's funny because the British have one story about how we got the Elgin Marbles, but the Greeks have a very different story.
I'm sure they do. The Nobbins came around and nicked our marbles.
They have to. Everyone knows those marbles fell off the back of a truck.
A very big truck.
And we're just holding on to them for a while.
Until we find the real owners.
They were resting in our accounts.
Can you prove you are the real owner of the marbles? Do you have any photo evidence of them being placed there?
Can you imagine? I mean, how many artifacts in this country didn't originate in this country? It must be just millions.
Well, technically all of them never evolved people separately from the rest of humanity. So everyone's an immigrant here.
Like an artifact.
I'm being, what is it, facetious or pedantic? I can't remember. Artifacts-wise, though, I mean, you know those treasure hoards that people keep finding and stuff like that? I suppose they originated here, but I don't know. Do we have gold mines in the UK?
Oh, I think in Wales.
The Welsh have gold?
I think so.
Knew there was a reason I liked Wales. Oh, God. Now I'm going to be like one of those weird prospectors from the Old West. you know, panning for gold in the Welsh valleys, even though there's a working mine there. So, anyway, do you remember Lucy Ellman wrote a 1,000 pages that were just basically one long sentence?
Yes. Yes, we mentioned that last episode.
Yep.
Oh, is this the one where there's like 3 full stops in the whole thing?
Mm, something like that.
Yeah, it missed out on the Booker Prize, but Ducks Newburyport has won the £10,000 prize for fiction, which is the Goldsmiths Prize.
That's the book that is supposed to be endless. It's a very long book, is it?
Yeah, and weirdly enough, it's not the first time I've encountered this sort of stuff. There's a local author. Wrote a book called 10 Story Love Song.
Oh, I've heard of that. And who was it?
I'm trying to remember his name. It was...
did he do the one about apples or Eden or yeah. something about... Yeah, I forgot his name now.
It was Richard...
Yeah.
I mean, Richard Millward, that's it.
That's it.
Yeah, and the way he did 10 Story Love Song, he didn't use any paragraphs. So it was just basically all a column of text.
Ah, right, and it was about love.
Yeah. And so it's not the first time I've encountered using the text in a specific way, using the actual sentence structure, paragraphs, whatever, in a specific way. But the Goldsmiths Prize is for fiction at its most novel and was praised by judges as a masterpiece. It's a stream of consciousness internal monologue of a mother in Ohio as she bakes pies in her kitchen.
Yeah.
Do you think sometimes these book awards, it gets quite late and they realise, oh no, we haven't actually read any of these. Okay, this one's got the most words, therefore it is the best book.
I think that's it, probably. There's
so many words per money in this one.
Yeah. I think, though, this is possibly one of the greatest sentences that I've seen, and I mean that very, very sarcastically.
Oh, no. If you're going to be reading from the book, this is just for, like, the next 9 hours.
Oh, no. Not from the book. This is from the... Let's see. This is a commentary from the Goldsmiths Prize. They set out to reward fiction that breaks the mold or extends the possibilities of the novel form. What does that mean, extends the possibilities of the novel form? Is it going to be, like, pages within pages that open out onto other pages? Are you going to add pictures? Because then it's a comic.
Yeah, it makes it sound like a centerfold. But, yeah, he's just sort of like playing with the whole notion of what a novel is. And this person, Lucy Ellman, has obviously thought, you know, novels are all very well, but what they really need is fewer full stops. And more words.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad someone's finally broken into the bold new category of what if books were just harder to read?
My main issue with this...
30 pages.
Yeah, my main issue with this is that old thing, when is a book not a book? You're like, well, when it's a film, when it's a song, when it's a comic, when it's a video game. When it's a board game, when it's anything other than a book, but something that still tells a story.
When is a book not a book? It's a bloody pain in the arse.
That's because you picked the wrong... That didn't have the softest pages.
Hasn't this already been invented, though? I mean, there was a whole like section of literature that was stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, when it was first... sort of thought up in the early part of last century.
Well, I was about to say, there were a few of the stream of consciousness novels in the 50s and 60s. And I know there was one that came out after the Vietnam War in America, which was all about a soldier coming back. And it was one of the, I think it was one of the inspirations for, you know, the film Jacob's Ladder?
Oh, yeah.
I think it was one of the inspirations for that.
Right, that would have been really interesting, actually, because he was He was given drugs, wasn't he, the character?
Yeah.
And that, I think, stream of consciousness seems like it would be particularly appropriate for that.
Yeah. So it's not
some kind of weird boogaloo, what's going on?
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably through that sentence that the words I was trying to look for to describe that were stream of consciousness.
Well, it's like in action as it's happening, breaking news.
Weirdly enough. And I
suppose something like To the Lighthouse or something where it's somebody's frame of mind and the anxiety and the worries and the concerns and the hang-ups about that person's mind, and those are the thoughts that are racing and scrambling and messed up.
So
that would make it an appropriate use of the form.
Yeah. It's just, it's still a book.
It is, yeah.
You're not extending...
No, it's a book. I mean, at its most basic level, it's between two covers and it contains a lot of words.
On pages. So it's
on
still
pages
a book.
In sentences and things.
So how does that extend the possibility of the novel form?
I've not read it. I mean, I have to say.
I'm just saying if it's
1,000 pages.
If it's 1,000 pages between two covers and contains a lot of words, that's still a book.
It's still a book, but there's something about it. Obviously, it's still a book. It's got 1,000 words. It's still between two covers. It's still a book. It contains a stream of consciousness, which is still a book, and it's not particularly original as a concept, but maybe she's done something even more original with it. I wouldn't know. I've not read it.
Okay, cool.
I bet we probably shouldn't be dunking too hard on this book we have not read, but...
Yeah.
God, does it sound so tedious?
It's slightly disingenuous.
Yeah. Something nice. A woman has been reunited with a copy of The Secret Garden that she used to own as a child and was serendipitously discovered for sale on the shelves of the Museum of English Rural Life shop. So she bought it again for 50 pence.
Oh, bless her.
Oh, well, did it have like an inscription or anything inside it?
Yeah.
Put a name in it originally.
Well, it wasn't her name. It was her sister's name in the front cover. It was written in characters that she'd dreamed up as a child. And so when she saw the Children's Classics edition of The Secret Garden, the Ladybird Children's Classics edition, she saw it in the charity shop and she thought, oh, that brings back memories. And then she opened it up and saw her sister's name in that handwriting. And she thought, oh, my God, this is... The one from this is mine.
That's Aww. Really cool.
That's very cool. That's really sweet.
She had a grid on a sheet of paper with a key as to what each of the symbols meant that made up her sister's name, because it was like, you know how kids play with chords and stuff like that?
Yeah.
So they basically did something like that. And she made that in 93, 94. So it's been 26 years since then. Which I thought was quite nice. And Graham obviously thought the same as well, since he found this article.
It's very sweet.
But, we're going to have some fun now, because this is a story that Graham didn't have, but I found.
Okay.
Right. So, you know the word of the year?
Yes.
Right. It's usually the Oxford English...
I forgot what it was now.
What was the word...
You said a couple of weeks ago, didn't you?
Yeah. What was the word of the year? Does anyone remember?
Oh, it was something that we thought it was already in the dictionary, and what was, isn't it, do we already know this anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah, like selfie or something that's already taken a place.
Was it selfie?
Was it selfie?
No, I don't think it was selfie. It was something else, wasn't it?
Oh, I forgot.
Do you not just have the answer, Rob?
Well, no.
You led us down this merry trail without a guide. We're lost in the woods for confusion.
All I'm saying is that the word of the year for this year, no, that wasn't the word of the year. It was words that were added to the English language, to the Oxford English Dictionary. Sorry, we made a mistake. The word of the year hasn't come out.
Right.
But Collins Dictionary have kind of got the jump on everybody,
right.
Because they've released their word of the year early. And their word of the year this year is climate strike.
That's one word, is it?
No, it's two words.
Okay. See where I have a problem with this.
No integrity anymore.
So, it's climate strike thanks to Greta Thunberg and Extinction Rebellion, which I think is great.
Yes.
B- but it's still two words.
One of those things is really cool.
Yeah. the choice was revealed in a new list of, in a list of new and notable words compiled by Collins lexicographers. Climate strike was first registered in November 2015, when the first event of that name took place to coincide with the UN Climate Change Conference in Paris. Other picks include rewilding, which is the practice of returning land to a wild state. BOPO. Does anyone know what BOPO means?
Is it BOPO?
Yeah.
Is it something population?
Nope.
Oh, I don't know.
Short word for body positivity.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Hope punk.
Hope punk?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that. What's that?
Andrew?
I think that is the fantasy role-playing character I make up who can devastate enemies with her mighty climate strike.
Climate strike!
It's a word...
She has a weapon for that.
Yeah, it's a word first used in 2017 by writer Alexandra Rowland. It's one of those made-up words, you know, like dubstep. It emphasizes the positive messages of hope and optimism exemplified in TV shows like The Great British Bake Off.
Is it not just another word for traditional?
Yeah, you might say
nice.
That.
Nice.
Nice. Yeah. You've invented the word sweet. Nice is what you've done.
I mean, other words on Colin's Word of the Year shortlist were entryists.
Not. Okay, so what's entryists?
Well, entryists are, it's taken from the word entryism, which is it's a political strategy in which an organization or state encourages its members or supporters to join another, usually larger organization, in an attempt to expand influence and expand their ideas and program. So entryists would be the people performing the entryism into an organization. That just sounds wrong.
Right.
Double down.
Yeah, I don't know. People performing the entryism just makes me upset deep in my bones.
Exactly.
Yeah, it does sound like it'll grate on your ears because it's not entering or entry, and it's encouraging you to take a bit of a step forward into a movement more as. As in a group of people kind of movement rather than somebody moving forward through into something.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
And other words include double down.
Yeah, that's a new one. That's a fairly last few years. There's only a handful of years that's been around. Three or four.
Well, no, I mean, it's been around for a while, isn't it? A term from Blackjack.
It's been sort of quite a... It feels like it's really grown in prominence over the past two or 3 years.
Okay, one that has always been around and hasn't really grown in prominence, cancelled.
What?
Cancelled.
Cancelled?
Yeah, the word cancelled.
Oh, is it used in a new context?
Nope.
So it's just the word
cancelled? Well, no, I think it is there has been a kind of paradigm shift to mean a cancelled thing is not just a thing that is was in production and has now been stopped, but it's now a more general this person is bad type thing.
Oh, really? You can say somebody is cancelled?
Yeah.
Like Trump is cancelled?
I think that is the very phrase that is often uttered.
See, that sounds really sinister to me. If you say this
I think he might even have been the one who came up with it.
I mean, that just sounds really sinister. It just sounds like this person is cancelled and then you never see them again.
Like they've been deleted.
Well, you remember that Doctor Who episode with the bizarre version of The Weakest Link with the robot, what's-her-face?
Yeah, it is very much the thing that you're cancelled and then hitting the hidden switch under the desk.
Yeah. deepfake, which,
Oh, yeah.
That's one of the ones that I think would have been a contender for the Collins Word of the Year. I think it's a contender for Word of the Year. Given some of the stuff that they've done with it.
Does it have a high enough profile? It has a novelty and it really strikes like a big clear bell. I don't know whether it has the profile. Or...
Yeah, non-binary.
Yeah, fair dues.
Yeah, which I've got no problem with. And influencer.
Oh, yeah, I suppose. But that's an old one, though, isn't it? I mean, well, been going for more than a decade, surely.
Well, the term influencer, I think it's been around for a long time, but I think it's just in the last year.
In particular to social media.
Yeah, I think in the last year it's become more prominent, especially with the rise of, with the rise of marketing trends and with the rise of, like, shopping trends and people becoming more sheep-like. So I think the whole point of an influencer has become more prominent, even though I would hate to consider myself as an influencer of any sort. Makes me
well. I've got cringe. Very good news for you, Rob.
I was going to say that's lucky.
Yeah, I know. I'm really lucky in that respect, in that no one takes any influence from me.
could you imagine if someone listened to this podcast and based their life decisions on?
That would be bad. That would be very,
like
very
a solid
bad.
10 minutes slagging off a book that we've not read and have, like, had a fair synopsis for.
That is a fair point.
Don't do it, kids. Don't take life advice from this podcast. Just laugh along
take
with us.
Take the life advice to not take our life advice.
Yes. Just laugh along with us, then go to bed. Okay.
Now go to beard.
Well, it is November, isn't it?
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, I think influence has been around longer, and I think it's sort of not as it, and obviously it's been around for decades, but like in specifically like with relating to social media, I think that's been around longer. Like I think it's been around about a decade.
So anyway, Graham left us with one final thing. Which I am putting into the chat for you guys. It is the Merriam-Webster Time Traveler, in which you can put in the date and find out which words were around, which words appeared during the year of your birth.
Oh, let's have a look. Oh, here we go. Ding.
Okay, 1991, 3D printer. African American Vernacular English, AHA, Arnold Palmer.
Did you say AHA? That's aha, as in the band.
Okay, but it's all capitalized though. Oh, Arnold Palmer is a cold beverage of iced tea mixed with lemonade.
Do you know what the first one on mine is? Adult onset diabetes. I'm looking at him going. That's bad.
So, in consolation, I have scrolled down a bit, and another one of the words from 1991 is cybersex and cybercrime.
I mean, from 1975.
And hoochie.
Olive Ridley, what is that? One trick pony.
From 1975, I've got adult onset diabetes, airball, alternative rock, anti-macho.
Ketoconazole. Yeah.
What was it? Baked. I was baked.
Oh, it was a ha.
Arena football. Asian tiger mosquito. Wow. Bungee jump. How about that?
Cognitive behavioral therapy is also one from my... oh, God. It gets worse. That, and then continuous... positive airway pressure, creme anglaise, CT scanner, CAT scanner, curb appeal, date rape, debit card.
That took a turn.
That went down a...
I'm like, wow.
Big Bang Theory.
Gender bender. whatever the hell G-rated means.
Micro-miniaturization. Microwave oven.
It's
Sovietologist.
What?
Wow.
Ticker.
Oh, veggie. God.
I'm not looking at my own, I'm looking at random years.
I was going to say Sovietologist.
Nice try.
Oh, God, the word phallocratic is from my birth year. What the hell does that mean?
Phallocratic? Oh, wow.
Oh, I have to know what this means. relating to...
Can you imagine phallocratic entryists?
Relating to or resulting from or advocating masculine power and dominance. Wow.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, funnily enough.
Let's have a look. I think phallocratic entryists is a new insult for people there, Andrew.
Adsorbent. Anti-feminist. What? Anti-feminist is from 1900.
Is it?
Yeah.
Anti-macho is from 1975, the year when phallocratic also appeared.
Atomic layer deposition is from 1991.
Apparently Smash Mouth are also from 1975.
Dodgeball, 1900. Easter Bunny, 1900.
Yeah.
Fistulous Withers. And please welcome my next guest, Fistulous Withers.
He sounds like
Fistulous Wizard with his phallocratic entryist.
He sounds like, you know, the lead of one of those all beard banjo bands from the Deep South.
Ooh, look at this. It goes way back. 1800. What have we got in 1800? Academic year. Aspirator. Berserk.
How back does it actually go? The 12th.
What's the first word?
Before the 12th century.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa. Before the 12th century. What have we got? Aaron. Well, you know, Kelsopries. Abel. Kelsopries. Adam. Yeah. Abraham. It's just names from the Bible. Almighty. Antichrist. Balaam.
They've got Michaelmas.
Yes, which we still obviously religiously celebrate every year.
Exactly.
Beowulf. Beelzebub. Oh, black pepper, though. That's a surprise.
Apparently Candlemas. They had Vulcans in the before the 12th century.
Christendom, Christmas, church, churchly. Lots of kind of church-based words here. Danelaw,
again, maybe not surprising.
Not surprising. No flags, obviously. Grendel?
What's a cooking stool?
Oh, it's the same as a ducking stool.
Is it?
Yeah, apparently. You know when you are a cook or a cuckold?
Oh, like a right. Cuckold,
and then you... Yeah, you have
so
to
basically get, for adulterers.
I think so. Yeah, I think... Somebody who's been adulterous, or somebody who's been cheated on, maybe. Lazarus, Levi. No surprises here.
I think we're getting lost in a sea of words now. So there's I think words. Possibly it's time to end the show.
Yeah, see, I do like to imagine the image of us all just like the end of Terminator 2 sinking into a big vat of words, just giving a single thumbs up as we go.
Yeah, sounds about right. So that's us for this week. If you want to find any of our previous episodes, you'll find them on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, or you'll find them on any podcast provider. We're on all of them, so do check us out. If you're listening through any kind of service like that, then leave us a rating, leave us a review. It does help us improve. It does help us with exposure. On our website, you'll also find our Patreon, so if you want to show your support, then you can do so. That's all for now, then. We'll see you in a fortnight. Until then, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
Acute flaccid myelitis. 2014. I've been Sarah. Bye.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.
Livermorium.